Les colloques du Collège de France.
Let me first apologize for not having been able to be more active and present in this event. You may know that TEC got a new status It's a fully independent academic institution now in France, and I was elected president of that institution yesterday afternoon, so I couldn't be one. So the welfare cost of ignoring the bedtime. Sorry, this is quite of an obscure title. Let me explain this. So entrepreneurship is at the source of growth and prosperity. We hope that we live in an economic system where, in the myriad of investment opportunity we face, the system is able to pick up the subset of this investment opportunities that maximize welfare. So one possibility is to find the subset that maximize the expected growth. But we know that we are risk averse, and so we need to take into account in this process of selecting these investment projects. We do not need only to take into account of the expected return of those projects. We also need to take into account of the contribution of this project to the aggregate risk. And I have reason to believe, and I'm not the only one to believe, that this trade-off between risk and expected return is not perfectly well taken into organized in the system. I mean, I will give you at least two examples, one big one associated to the public sector, but I believe that in the private sector we also face problem there. Yes. So risk aversion is an important dimension of human beings. So that requires that when we make an action, we need to take into account of the uncertainty related to the outcomes of this action. And in the field of investment decision, in fact, there are two faces of the same coin related to risk aversion. On one side, because investors are risk averse, investors need to be compensated for the risk they take when they pick up the specific assets. And corporations, which make the decision, investment decision into actual project, they should be penalized for the risk they impose to society. Okay, in fact, that the two faces of the same coin, the risk adjustment in the expected return generated by corporate decision and transfer to investor, we also could refer to the weighted average cost of capital or the discount rates. This risk adjustment of those economic variables, financial variables, control for this trade-off, and so therefore for the compensation to the investors for the risk and for the incentive for corporation to take into account of the riskiness of their actions. And so in particular, it's important in this process of selecting the investment project that maximize welfare, it's good to give bonuses to investment project that edge the macroeconomic risk, and to penalize projects that increase the macroeconomic risk. And for edging project that edge the macroeconomic risk, you can think of many different things. My field of specialty over the last 20 years has been climate change, and so one of the issues is whether investing in the energy transition do not only reduce the expected damage for future generation, but does it also edge the risk, the macroeconomic risk borne by future generation. In that second case, where if it edge the macroeconomic risk for future generation, we should select a smaller discount rate when we measure the social cost of carbon, and that would indeed increase the carbon value and therefore the incentive to to invest in decarbonization action. Strategic oil reserve is another example that also edged the macroeconomic risk. Think about last year energy crisis in Europe. If we would have had a strategic oil reserve in Europe, we would have probably been better able to reduce the crisis for European consumers and probably also to be stronger on the international
public arena. Go ahead. Suppose we're in a kind of desperate situation, you know, climate, we haven't listened to Christian for too long, and we are really, there is a kind of plan B solution, which is risky, but it's gamble for resurrection, whatever. Okay, so suppose there is something very risky, very innovative, maybe riskier because more innovative, but here we are, you know, we want to save, that is the chance that we can save humankind. What would you do? You said because it's risky, I don't do it. Macroeconomic risk, but it's gamble for resurrection.
Gambling for resurrection is mostly about making a decision where you reduce the risk of dying. And this probability of dying is large if you don't do anything. What we know from decision theory over the last 20 years is that what a very important dimension in risk management is not really the volatility around the mean, but it's really the probability of extreme events. And that will be in my paper, by the way. And so even the plausibility of catastrophes, although the catastrophe has a very small probability, is an important dimension in the way we value those risks. Okay, so yes, gambling for resurrection or taking care of the plausibility of catastrophic event is an important dimension, and that should be taken into account when we think about how to when we make this trade-off between expected return and risk. This risk dimension is very important. Okay. But more fundamentally, my paper here, it will be about the measurement of the welfare loss we make when we don't make the right trade-off when we make those decisions about investment or policies that affect both the expected growth and the risk. When we don't make the right trade-off between the two, given the degree of risk aversion of the people who bear the risk, what's the welfare cost of that? And why do I raise this question? I raise this question mostly because, I work in climate change, and I'm trying to make a measure of what should be the social cost of carbon, and I'm very frustrated by the academic and also policy debate on this, because when people think about how to penalize investment projects because they increase the macroeconomic risk, in the public arena, in the public sector, they ignore the beta. I mean, they ignore the risk. Beta is for the reference to the CAPM beta. I mean, when we adjust the discount rate to the riskiness of the project, we do it by measuring the beta of the project. And we select a larger discount rate for projects with larger beta that generate a larger macroeconomic risk. And so in the debate on the social cost of carbon, economists have been using the Ramsey rule or the risk-free rate, the interest rate, and so they basically ignore completely the risk impact of the energy transition. And so that's a problem. I will go back to that in the next slide. But also in the private sector, we face a very similar problem. I mean, my colleague Philippe Kruger, Augustin Landier, and David Tesmar, 10 years ago, explained that when we look at private corporate decision about investment project, it seems that those corporations also ignore the fact that some project into their corporation have very different risk profile. They use the same discount rate. across all projects to determine whether to invest in those projects or not. So they don't adjust their evaluation of the project to the risk of the project. Okay, so that's they call that the WACC fallacy. The WACC fallacy is this idea that within a corporation, the corporation should use the same discount rate, which is the weighted average cost of capital, to evaluate all risk, all investment projects in the corporation. Same thing for the public sector. I mean, you have famous economists like Joe Stiglitz, which says, in order to evaluate public investment projects, we should use the cost of capital, the public cost of capital, which is the sovereign cost, the interest rate on sovereign bonds. And during the last 20 years, we have seen periods where this sovereign cost, the cost of sovereign debt was very small, and therefore that was an incentive to invest a lot. This is a fallacy. I mean, we know the Modigliani-Miller theorem. The way we evaluate a project should be independent of the way it's funded. So the consequence of this ignorance of risk when we evaluate investment projects generate a very inefficient allocation of capital in the economy, and that generates a welfare loss. And so I would like to estimate this welfare loss, trying to convince in particular the public sector to adjust their public discount rate to the riskiness of their project, but the issue is the same for the private sector. So yes, let me focus a minute on my fight over the last 15 years. It's a shame that in our profession we have not been able to convince a government in the Western world, in particular, to take into account of risk, the impact of their policies, in particular investment policies, to take into account the riskiness of those policies. Okay, and the point is, in the US, for example, all public actions must be measured using a single discount rate that has been, for the last 20 years, fixed at 7%. So in order to determine whether a policy is generate a positive value in the US, they look at the flow of expected net benefits of the project. They discount this flow at 7%, and if this is positive, this present value, net present value is positive, the policy is said to be value creating. Well, this is crazy. Okay, this is crazy. I mean, first, 7% is very large, and second, this is not adjusted to risk. So this is as if in the US people are risk neutral. Okay, and clearly people are not risk neutral, and risk play a very important role in the way they behave in terms of insurance demand, in terms of prevention of risk, in terms of portfolio choice, and so on. So it's terrible. Well, the little story is, last April, 2 months ago, the OMB published a draft circular effort. Sorry for the technicalities of the terminology here. So the circular effort is the document that determines the discount rate and justifies the discount rate. And they propose a new discount rate in this draft circular effort. And you have the possibility to comment on it until later today. Today is the last day where you can comment on that, so feel free to comment after this presentation.
If you don't do, because for example, I think of reinvestment, if I don't do them, I face risk too. So you compare the risk win and win out. That's in fact, no. You don't just look at the riskiness of the. You look at the riskiness of not implementing.
So when you do cost-benefit analysis, you have a benchmark and you compare. And both can be risky. Right. And therefore, some action can reduce the risk in the benchmark, and that's the value. So the new proposal is to have, and that's too bad. I mean, they propose a new discount rate of 1.7%. Not risk adjusted. So now I think this 1.7% is the mean real interest rate of 10 years T-bonds over the last 20 years. So it's a complete failure, and I've been commenting on this over the last 2 months. It's a complete failure. It's a good idea to reduce the discount rate from 7% to something smaller, but 1.7% clearly too small first. And second, we need to adjust for risk, and it's still not the case. So I hope we will not go for another 20 years in the U.S. without a risk adjustment of the public discount rate. In the UK, something similar, a single discount rate of 3.7%. Look at the Green Book that was published last year. Same problem. This is, in fact, we call that the Arolin fallacy. Arolin, 1971, published a paper where they said, the state is so big that it should behave in a risk-neutral way because we can diversify, that the state can diversify the risk. Well, of course, that's not true. We know that since the creation of the consumption-based capital asset pricing model, many risks, most risks, are not diversifiable. They are correlated with each other and this correlation generates a macroeconomic risk, even when you have a myriad of such investment projects. Okay, France is the only place in the world where the public sector adjusts the public discount rate to the riskiness of the project, and that was the outcome of my report that was requested by the government in 2011. I explained that, the consumption-based capital asset pricing model, well, there are many difficulties, but from a normative point of view, discounted expected utility model is a good idea. You can correct for the asset pricing puzzles there by, for example, introducing macro catastrophes into the standard Brownian motion assumption. And so from a normative point of view, we should discount project by using a discount rate that is adjusted to risk by using the CAPM formula. Is it the right thing? No, this is, yes.
Christian, can I just ask you a question of sort of, given you've been involved in these debates? When I look at the UK, the problem seems to be not the discount rate of the Greek book, but the failure of the very low investment rate of the UK and low public investment is due to the fact that there is a lot of political forces preventing rational investments taking place. So huge nimbyism, political prevarication, uncertainty. Those things all seem to be much more important in blocking things that want to happen than whatever the number is.
Well,
For
the UK, I've been involved over the last 20 years in the different version of the Green Book. I know the people from the public sector phase of it. I don't know how it is implemented, and of course, there are probably a lot of asymmetric information, incentives, ministry fighting against each other in order to attract public funding. We face the same thing in France. Very quickly, the time is coming short. In France, so I have been able to convince the government to use this formula so the public discount rate for a specific project should be equal to the risk-free rate plus a beta, which is project specific time and aggregate risk premium. I mean, you know that. Okay. And at that time, we recommended a risk-free rate of 2% and an aggregate risk premium pi of 2%. And in fact, the problem is after publishing this report, it was 2011, it was 1 year before the arrival of François Hollande at l'Elysée, and the year after, the lobbies from the railways industries came to see Hollande and said, if that is not possible, we should not do that, because for railways, the beta is between 2 and 3. And so for fast train line, you take a discount rate of 2% plus 3 times 2%, that's 8%. And so you kill any investment, any new investment in fast railways line. And so they try to eliminate this, go back to the standard approach, saying, you know, in particular, France cannot be right alone. If all other countries do use a single discount rate, we must be wrong. That's frustrating as an argument, you know. So, well, these days, when Roger Guenry published a new report 2 years ago, and now currently in France, we still live with this risk adjusting mechanism with a risk-free rate of 1.2%. And the risk premium of 2%. So that's good, but that's very bad in other countries. So let me...
I would have
a lot to say about that, but I won't, as I don't have time. Yeah, you know, estimating the beta is considered as quite difficult. The beta is an income elasticity of the net benefits of the project, okay? But by how much your net benefits increase when aggregate consumption increases by 1%. Okay, that's the beta. Okay, this is an income elasticity. People tell me, oh, this is too complex, I cannot measure that, and so in many cases, they use the beta equal 1 for project evaluation. They don't try to depart from this benchmark of beta equal 1 and use 3.2% of the FD discount rate. So that does not work perfectly well. Excuse me? So yes, so a project is defined by its beta. So the states decide about the RF, the risk-free rate, and the price, the aggregate risk premium. This is provided as the parameters to the evaluators. The evaluators need to estimate the beta of their project and then estimate the risk adjustment of the discount rate, and then they do the standard cost-benefit analysis.
But the numbers that you're giving are the numbers now or something?
Those numbers, these two numbers?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're evaluated periodically using a model similar to what I will present, well, a simplified version of that. Okay, so let me go to the model. Because of lack of time, what I do, I use a sophisticated version of the capital asset pricing, the consumption-based capital asset pricing model. In the standard model, there is only one sort of investment, you know, the Lucas tree, and everybody has the same tree and face the same risk. So there is no issue of capital allocation there. So what I do, I generalize this to have, rather than a Lucas tree, I have a Lucas orchard. Okay, I have different trees of different quality, of different correlation with the macroeconomic risk. So that allow me to talk about optimal capital allocation and the trade-off between risk and expected return. I depart from the Gaussian calibration of the CAPM in order to solve the standard asset pricing models. I use the Barrow's catastrophe, as you probably already understood.
The question I have on this kind of model, for example, the rare disaster model of Barrow or whatever, is that there is never endogenous growth inside there. Is that it could be that when you have something really dramatic, you know, maybe that triggers something, and I was struck that none of these, the rest is that someone will factor that in. Because sometimes it takes, you know, maybe it will take Wall Street to be underwater for something big to happen, you know, I don't know, but sometimes big things, you know, wake you up and have this. And the models I've seen of rare disaster never factor that in.
Yeah, but.
And that's an insight from the Jeune Bourg thing. I don't know how you can do it, by the way.
Yeah, but Philippe, you are perfectly right. But more generally, I mean, this entire asset pricing literature departs from the literature on optimal growth. In optimal growth, at the same time, you determine the optimal growth and the prices associated to that support this equilibrium or optimal growth. In asset pricing literature, we assume the growth. You know, how CT, the aggregate consumption evolve over time, this is completely exogenous. And you...
It's not just the growth, it's the risk reduction. There might be something that reduces the risk. You see, it's so dramatic that, you know, It's a bit, you see the difference, you know, when you had the pandemics, first you had the Imperial College figures, which were crazy, because they didn't factor in human reaction.
That's
they didn't factor in that we would do something, that BARDA would be created, would be there. You see that we would,
Okay,
it's
so...
It's just rules, it's just how we react. That's so, why, yeah. That's why the members of Imperial College are so grossly wrong.
Yeah, so in my model, people select optimally their action. They select optimally the investment in which they decide to, I mean, which investment project they will implement. But there is no really a reaction because my process is IID and the trees follow an IID process. So, so let me go into the details. So here I have my model is the simplest extension of the consumption-based capital asset pricing model in which I would be able to talk about capital allocation and the trade-off between risk and return. So a project in my economy, so you have, in my economy, you have a constellation of investment projects, something like that, you know. So you have a constellation of projects. One point is a project. A project is determined by a pair of scalar. The beta, which measure the contribution of the project to the aggregate risk, and theta, which is the expected growth return. Okay, so you have this trade-off between risk and return, and you have a myriad. Each specific project is determined by a pair beta theta, and you have a distribution of this opportunity set of investment project. Okay, so that's the model. So technically, this means that this means that if you take a project that theta beta and you invest €1 in that project in period t plus one, you will get a gross return x t plus one, which is equal to theta plus beta times y. Y is the single risk factor in the economy. So all projects when beta is not zero, is exposed to this macroeconomic shock, plus idiosyncratic risk that you can eliminate by diversification. So theta is because expectation of y is zero, and the expectation of epsilon is zero too. Theta is the expected gross return of the project, and you see beta is the exposure of the project to the macroeconomic shock. Okay. So the problem is for the decision maker, and you have a representative investor there, is to determine the decision variable alpha t of theta beta, which is to represent the portfolio of investment in the economy by the representative agent. So alpha t of theta beta determine it give you the euros investment in period t by the representative agent into this project theta beta. And a portfolio is given by this function from R2 to R. And so what's the economic dynamics here? If ZT, so ZT plus one is total wealth at the T plus one. Okay, ZT plus one is just the aggregated the sum of all gross return from your portfolio. So if you invest alpha t euros in project theta beta, which generate a gross return xt plus 1 theta beta in t plus 1, you aggregate that over theta and beta, and that gives you wealth at the period t plus 1. You can rewrite that in a specific way using theta bar and beta bar, which are respectively the expected gross return of your portfolio and the average exposure to the macroeconomic risk. You do the math there. There is a capacity. This is a linear technology. So if you don't take care, you will have an unbounded solution where you will invest everything into the most promising investment project. The alternative would be to allow for decreasing return to scale, or I put a capacity constraint. So you cannot invest more than ZT, the current wealth, divided by this parameter theta into a specific project. So you have a capacity constraint in investment. I assume constant relative exclamation gamma. And so the decision problem of this infinitely lived representative region consists in maximizing the intertemporal expected utility of the representative region. So that's standard. So the solution, the analytical solution of this problem is to select a portfolio strategy or an investment strategy. That's the rational solution that is such that you invest nothing in project theta beta when the expected return of that project is smaller than the risk-adjusted discount rate, okay, where R star is the risk-free rate and beta and pi star is the aggregate risk premium, and beta is the risk profile parameter of the project. So you see, you don't invest anything when the expected return is smaller than the risk-adjusted discount rate. You invest at the capacity when the expected return is larger than the risk-adjusted discount rate. And so you recognize here the consumption-based capital asset pricing model, so where you, in fact, this is equivalent to the decision rule, which consists in investing in the project theta beta, if and only if the present the net present value of the project discounted at rate R star plus beta pi star is positive. Okay, so but R star and pi star are endogenous, so the risk-free rate and the risk premia are, as in the consumption-based capital asset pricing model, endogenous. They are determined by these two first-order conditions. You see, you need to go into numerical analysis because R star and pi star are themselves dependent upon the decision you follow, so you need to solve that as a fixed point problem. So I solved the problem numerically. So you see, this is a representation of the rational solution. You invest in all projects, point here, that are above the security market line, which is given by theta equal R star plus beta pi star. Okay? So the slope of this curve is pi star, and the intersect here is R star. Okay, so that's the rational solution. As I said earlier, I use the Barrow idea of a macroeconomic catastrophe to solve the asset pricing puzzles. So with probability p, the risk factor will be extracted from a normal urn with a very small, I mean, very negative expected value. So calibration, again, I'm relatively late, so I take a degree of risk aversion. I basically use the Barrow calibration of the macro catastrophe model of consumption-based CAPM. So Barrow used a degree of relative risk aversion of 3. I take the rate of pure preference for the present of 1%. Theta, remember, this is the capacity limit into any investment project. So 1 over theta equal 2 means that if you would invest everything, your entire capital into the project, into the project, you can only invest in 50% of the project. Okay, so if you invest everything, you can invest only in 50% of the available project into the investment opportunity project. So for the remaining, I calibrate the model in order to fit different financial variables and growth variables. So in particular, I assume an heterogeneity on the risk profile. I assume that beta is normally distributed with mean mu, with mean mu beta equal 1, with the standard deviation of 0.5. The probability of catastrophe is 1.7%, and in case of catastrophe, the shock on Y is -40%. So, here are the characteristics of the first best solution. So, if you apply the optimal strategy, which consists in investing in all projects that has an expected return larger than the risk-adjusted discount rate, you will get that. So you will get a risk-free rate of basically 1%, an aggregate risk premium of a little bit larger than 2%. So you see this fit relatively well the asset prices over the last century. You invest in 48.6% of the investment project that are present in your opportunity set. What else? Consumption wealth ratio is 2.8%. The average expected return of implemented project is 4.4%. Expected growth rate of consumption is 1.5%, and so on. So the last number is critically important. So this is the measure of welfare. And I will now compare this optimal strategy to alternative strategy where you do not adjust for risk in the right way. So if you invest, if you follow this strategy, you will be able to generate intertemporal welfare, which is equivalent to consuming forever 4.64% of initial capital. Okay, so this is the certainty equivalent consumption flow. Okay, so that's the number that we will compare to alternatives. So now let me compare that to two alternative strategies that you can find in the debate about the people who think we should use a single discount rate in this economy. So one is, and that's the best one we can find when we think about using a single rate, let me use as a single discount rate to determine which investment project should be implemented, let me use the WACC, the weighted average cost of capital, the average return, expected return you see in the economy. Okay, the alternative strategy is to use the risk-free rate in the economy. Okay, the 1%. Okay, that's the 3%, then that's the 1%. Okay, so you see when you compare, this is the optimal strategy or the rational strategy, and that's the WACC strategy using this 3% for all projects. You see that the consequence is a misallocation of capital. Compared to the first best, using the WACC strategy implies that you will invest in those projects that in which you should not invest because the risk is too large compared to the expected return. And you will invest in those projects. You will not invest in those projects in the WACC strategy, in spite that you should invest in those projects because the risk is very small. And the return is relatively large. Okay, so you see here the misallocation of capital. What's the consequence of welfare? On welfare, well, I do two different exercises here. The first exercise I do is, let me assume first that there is only you who do not understand finance and you use this 3.3%. Okay, whereas all others are much cleverer than you and use the rational strategy. So in that case, reprinted the number that I gave earlier. That's the first best strategy, and that's the WACC strategy. I don't have, so you use a single discount rate of 3.08% to evaluate all projects. Any project that has an expected return larger than 3.08%, you invest in those projects. The consequence is that your welfare is reduced by one-fourth. You lose one-fourth of your welfare, of your intertemporal welfare by ignoring the beta. Okay, that's large. This welfare loss is very large. Okay, and so seeing the UK, the US using a single discount rate like that, I mean, make me sick, in fact. Okay, and for such a long time, and not having economists talking to policymakers in the US and the UK to say, you know, should do something better. Okay, we would increase welfare of the people by 25% at least if we move to something more clever, assuming rationality. Well, here is the alternative solution where, when the alternative approach where I assume that we all make the mistake, we all ignore the beta, we all use the same strategy using a single discount rate to evaluate all investment projects. In that case, yeah, the equilibrium will be different, the risk-free rate will be negative. Why? Well, because you take so much risk at equilibrium, very inefficient risk at equilibrium, your precautionary investment motive comes into the picture, and you, facing this risk, people want to save much more, and that will drop, that will reduce the risk-free rate. The aggregate risk premium will also be much larger for the same reason. And the bottom line is, when you do the welfare analysis, you also have the similar order of welfare loss. That's not too bad, only 25%. Let me finish my presentation by looking at the worst strategy, the one that is now presented by this draft circular A4, where the US, in the US, if we don't comment before midnight tonight, the US will use the 1.7% discount rate, which is the risk-free rate. This is not the what, this is not the average cost of capital in the economy, that's the risk-free rate in the US economy. So that is, you use this rule, you invest in all projects that lie above this risk-free rate of 1%. You see the problem from the picture. We have a big problem here. There are too many investment projects that pass the test of a positive net present value with this number. And therefore, in fact, you don't have a solution. In fact, it is here. You invest everything. You should not consume anything today because there is so much to invest with the positive net present value that you kill yourself by your excess of savings. And therefore, let me stop here. So there is the possibility, you know, typically when you talk to people where we should reduce the discount rate in the UK and the US, people say, oh yes, but okay, they understand there will be too many investment projects with a positive net present value, and then the state will have to ration public funding to this set of projects that pass the test of a positive net present value. And then when you do ration, when you use the risk-free rate of 1.7% and you realize that you need to ration randomly probably the distribution of public capital into those projects, yeah, that's where you have the catastrophe. So let me, here I suppose that you ration, the random rationing scheme is you select only 60% of the project that pass the test of a positive net present value. The equilibrium will look like that, and the welfare, the intertropical welfare will drop to 2.5% of initial capital. So basically, if you lose mostly 50%, half of your welfare disappears because of this crazy, crazy process of bad selection process. So thank you very much. So I hope that tonight you will write something to the OMB. I can send you the address of the website where you can come and go to tell those guys that they need to think more cleverly about how to select and evaluate projects in the US. Thank you very much.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.